On Monday, August 8th, Tall Can Audio hits 1,000 episodes.
Wait, that's still on? Who could possibly still care?
And the gang is all here to celebrate.
It's euphoric. It's got to be close to nirvana. It's outstanding.
For the first time ever, Maddie, Michaela, Rob, and Matt are all live in studio together.
It's happening, you guys. It's happening. Oh, my God, guys. Oh, my God. I wish you all were here.
Is this likely to go well?
Just check my notes here. No.
At least it will make a lot of noise.
Boom. Here comes the boom.
1,000 pods and 1,000 pints.
I don't think I've ever been as proud in my entire life.
TCA 1000 drops Monday, August 8th, wherever you find low-quality podcasts.
Fuck, it's out of control. Shit.
I went from the 11% Imperial Stout down to the 6.5 brute. Oh, I haven't done myself any favors.
Hey, somebody has run out on the field. Some goofball in a hat. Now he takes off the shirt. He's bare-chested and banging his chest. The guy is drunk, but there he goes. Oh, and they tackle him at the 40-yard line.
This is going great.
This is Tall Can Audio.
How's it going, everybody? Welcome back into an all-new episode of the Tall Can Audio Podcast. Matt over here, Rob over there. What's happening, man?
Typical Sunday stuff. You know how it is. Just, especially this time of year, a little bit of raking.
Our voice sounds less enthused than normal, or beaten down by the world around him, perhaps. As we all are, a little bit.
Yeah, it's just the end of it. No, totally good, man.
The end of the
totally
world?
Good. Yes.
It feels like a little bit sometimes.
I'm trying to avoid all that.
Oh, yeah?
In terms of, yeah, just, it's always sunny.
Serenity now.
Yes, exactly. What about you, man? What do you got going on over there?
You know what? I've been enjoying and I think we talked about this maybe not too long ago. I was enjoying the soundtrack to Tony Hawk Pro Skater 1. And they were re-releasing it. I think they already did, actually, but I don't
know. This is a video game?
Yeah. Oh, no. You didn't have Tony Hawk? Probably not.
Yeah, no.
Okay.
No.
On the PS1, or maybe it was PS2. It was PS1. And man, big time game. And it was all kinds of that, like, skate punk stuff, right? Like Goldfinger and these sorts of late 90s, early 2000s kind of. No, I know your definition of punk is the Clash and the Clash only, and anything that strays from that is unacceptable.
Ramones,
okay.
You know, Sex Pistols.
Seems dangerous. Eh?
Stiff little fingers. Yeah, for sure it does. I think they call it from, forget it. There's a bunch of movies. You can go with that. You ever see the movie Things to Do in Denver When You're Dead?
No.
Okay. Yeah, that involves the whole sticking the pistol up there.
Okay.
Buckwheat. Check that out.
Wherever you is. Or don't. But let us know. At Talk In Audio.
Definite Urban Dictionary thing. If you're gonna, probably not safe for work, but if you're working from home, you're not on a public.
If you're listening to this podcast at work, you've already shown you don't really value your, maybe you got headphones. I don't know.
For sure it's headphones.
It's
of course it
headphones.
Is. Of course it is. One of my coworkers listens to us
across the office
at work.
Yeah. Leaning out, giving you the thumbs up. Hey.
Or not.
Yeah. Thumbs down.
Saying Matt is so wrong.
Yeah, we get that a lot.
That's usually what I get. You're spot on, Rob. That's exactly what I was thinking. I don't know what Matt's thinking.
It should be noted that Rob also works with his partner who he just wants to give him the hair tussle and the way
and
to go,
my
big
mother,
guy.
Yeah. Who was also my prom date and thinks I'm super cute.
My mom says I'm cool. Your mom is wrong.
Yeah, and that's been the case so many times, right?
What are you drinking today, man?
I got a little double barrel action going on over here today, which is maybe. If we can check my tone and my vibrancy through the show, we'll know. I've doubled back to the Bijou, the brute from Nita.
Yes.
So a little stronger, a little more, mm-hmm. a little more uptick to it. And on the other side, I am casually sipping on. Yeah. Yes, I'm casually sipping on some of the Innocent Gun Vanishing Point.
Oh, nice.
Imperial Stout.
Love that. So I also double barreled at the moment as we had some technical difficulties getting fired up. So as is the case, I will look for any excuse to go and pour myself another of something new. And then poof, just like that, the technical difficulties resolved and I'm left with two full beverages. So we'll do our best to work through
well,
that.
Well, and the thing is, right, with the technical difficulties, Matt has assumed, not incorrectly, that it's Rob's fault. Somehow Rob
I got to play the odds, man.
Well, for sure, man. I get it. That's any good gambler does.
Yeah.
Not today, ladies and
not
gentlemen.
Not today. Today it was in the studio, and to this moment, I don't really understand what the problem was, but restarting on my end did fix it. So the problem, whatever it was, did lie over here. I am into Rainbow in the Dark Rye IPA.
This is it. I'm interested
I know,
in what you think.
I haven't taken a poll.
Bad boy a poll.
This is a 6.6 from the Red Line Brewing Company in Barrie, Ontario. I will give it a poll.
Okay, well, and Redline says, yeah, I'm going all out.
Ooh,
this
boy.
This is to me.
So it's crisp. I'm not getting any kind of rye off of it, which means you may enjoy it. I normally don't mind that kind of thing, but I'm not getting that sense from it at all. This is an IPA through and through. Longtime listeners know that's not always my bag, but I don't mind this. It's got a crisp kind of, I don't know, it hangs with you a little bit. Like it's still hanging around from that first pull. And I do enjoy that part of it. Maybe not at a party, maybe not where you walk around and it's on your breath for the next 6 hours, but sitting in here, who do I got to fucking impress, man?
Yeah. Well, and really,
where are my pants at?
Yeah. Have you not been, haven't seen them since March.
Right. That means they're not doing backup, folks.
Yeah, it's
they're
exactly
gone.
Right. I need a bungee cord to just sort of strap into it through the loophole.
So I don't mind it.
Okay. And so to you, does that just mean, and again, maybe it's just me, and there's going to be a bunch of people that are scoffing, you're like, rye, like just rye wheat as opposed to, you know, blending in a little rye.
If you have a rye... almost bread. Anything. Yeah. Okay. In the beer front, I almost expect it to be exactly what it's almost bready, or there's something like that to it, right? There's some sort of, I don't know how to describe the rye taste, but if you're someone who goes into a Quiznos, this is still a thing. We still have Quiznos.
I used to love the Black Angus Quiznos.
Yeah, man. Nasford on rye. Like, you know what you're looking for. And I don't mind a rye stout, a rye porter, a rye whatever is going on. But that means something. And I'm not finding whatever that is in this.
Clearly, I would agree with you, right? That it's just it's the separate use of the grain.
Yeah.
Right? As opposed to any kind of rye whiskey. But they are invariably always higher in alcohol,
yes.
Right?
Which, well, here we are.
Which is 6-6. What leads me. Yeah. And then it also has a little extra bite to it, right?
Yep.
And I find it hard to believe that just comes from the grain. clearly, that's likely the case. But it just always leaves me wondering, right? As a guy who's sampled more than a couple of ryes in his day.
Did you hear from your brother this week? Because he texted me. Looking for, he wanted to talk IPAs and sours. And I'm like, you have come to the wrong guy. And mainly local. He said, I sent him your way and said, Rob's always been more of an IPA guy than me. And certainly a little bit more of a sour guy. He's kind of sour over there.
Yeah. I think I'm the least sour of the three people mentioned in this conversation so far.
That's almost certainly true. But, did you hear from him? He was looking for local IPAs and sours.
What a dickhead. Maybe it's due to the fact that I've spent 9 hours with him last week.
I keep calling him a dickhead on the show.
Well, right to his face on the on the front porch of his house. No problems.
We had it coming.
This is it. It's a long time, but he's okay. He rolls with it and he gives his good or better than he gets. You know him, so he's not easily offended or put off. But no, I have not heard from him.
All right. Well, I was curious what that was all about because it was a local, but we'll wait and we'll see. Maybe this is, like I said, the Rainbow in the Dark Rye IPA. Have you seen what has happened? And I'm using the rainbow as the segue.
I think that's a Sammy Hagar tune.
Rainbow in the Dark.
Sure.
Could be. Are you familiar or were you before the presidential debates on Tuesday with the Proud Boys?
I was not.
So for those who are unfamiliar, the Proud Boys are a far right group. They'll deny it all day long until you actually confront them in the street. But their press releases would say they are not white supremacists. Their actions would all suggest the other way. But they're a far right group. They show up at any kind of Black Lives Matter, any kind of even mildly left leaning protest and start fucking things up. And so their group is called the Proud Boys. And if you want to converse with them and talk about their causes, you use the hashtag Proud Boys. Until the last couple days, when gay gentlemen across North America have begun using the hashtag Proud Boys, and this has happened before with different groups, to take away that hashtag, and here's, you know, Bob and Jim at their wedding. Or here's just two guys holding hands walking down the street. Here are links to all sorts of gay alliance or support groups or whatever. If you search hashtag Proud Boys now, you are far more likely to see all kinds of links to, you know, supportive gay-facing communities or organizations than the bullshit far-right gay-hating Proud Boys organization. It's fucking gorgeous, man.
Just because you stole the word right out of my mouth, gorgeous. That's exactly what that is, right? I couldn't be prouder. I'm a boy, and I am as proud as I could possibly be.
And it's like if you a quick search on any of the social media, and it's just like you would see anywhere. It's just two people on a date at a beach or hanging out at a bar or their wedding or Christmas morning with their adopted kids or whatever it might be. They have overrun this hashtag. It's amazing, man.
See, to me, that's social media used for good.
Yes, of course. And we've seen it in other, I can't remember specific ones now, but just You find out that a far-right group is using a certain hashtag and different causes will just completely take it over and wipe their shit right off the map. It's tremendous.
Yeah, and I had heard, and again, this is fuzzy, and fuzzy facts, which actually could be the subtitle of many of these shows. Yeah, that one of the clothing lines, these guys like to wear, I don't know, whether it was Lacoste or whether it was Fred Perry, that they like to show up in these.
Could be.
This, and this, the company, whether it was Fred Perry, which, are you familiar with Fred Perry?
No, I'm not.
So it's a golf shirt or a tennis shirt in this case, right? Lacoste and Fred Perry are both. That this is something that they sort of, air quotes, uniform. And so, yeah, the companies have put out a
trying to distance
them. We don't win for that. Yeah, themselves. Exactly. Heavily distance themselves from that. But no, prior to the debate,
which, did you watch the debate?
I didn't. Yeah, I watched about a half hour.
So
the start.
Yeah, I watched the first 13 minutes and went, I got to get out of here. And then I disappeared for 10 or 15. And for some reason, and it's probably social media, right? It was probably Twitter. What is happening? And I circled back, and I hate myself for it, but I had to come back and watch. See,
that was meltdown. That was game one of the Jays play-in series, I believe.
It started after the game, but
yeah, but yeah. I taped the Jays game.
Oh, okay, yeah.
And so taped it. I was trying to get it in prior to the debate, and then I didn't, and so I had to stop watching the Jays at about in the sixth inning.
What a fucking gong show!
And moved over, and so we're watching it here, and And I said, are you learning anything? Like, the treatment of any of the issues was superficial at best.
Yep.
And you couldn't get past any of the bullshit nonsense, right, that was being thrown around. And I thought, if this was a grade 8 debate, you would shut that down.
You'd still think this is this is terrible.
And you'd be disappointed.
Yeah.
With the 13-year-olds who were involved in that debate.
Right. I thought early on Biden was getting his ass kicked just because he was letting Trump do what he wanted. But as it went on, I did feel like there will be Democrat T-shirts that say, "Will you shut up, man?" Like that, like Biden hit him with a couple of times.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
And this clown. What a clown. You're the worst president this country has ever seen. And this was clearly the strategy.
Fact. That's a fact.
Of course it is. If you've spent your entire defense or your entire campaign strategy on Sleepy Joe, he's not going to be able to debate, all these, then you have no choice but to keep interrupting him, keep trying to knock him off track. Because as soon as he makes one salient point, he's stepped over the super low bar you set for him, right? Yeah. So that's what kept happening. Trump kept trying to interrupt. And I thought, what's his name? Wallace from... Mike Wallace.
Chris
Wallace, you're right. I thought he sucked. I don't think
he did suck.
He did shit. Now, I don't know what he's supposed to do, and they're talking about changing the rules. Maybe that's the... But at the same time, are we going to change the rules for one douchebag, or do you just go, if you can't do this right, you're out, and it's Joe Biden who faces town hall the next time?
You bring up an excellent point because... you know, it's that whole free speech. Uh-huh. And we all look at it and go, that's the least presidential thing ever, right? And
his people love it.
Okay, well, I was just going to say, you hope what happens in those situations is that the voters turn on that kind of idiocy, right? That they go, oh, see, that I'm embarrassed by that, and I don't want to be connected with that.
Right.
But I heard somebody say the next day, how many votes do you think Trump lost in that debate?
Zero. I think zero.
None. This is it. People who were voting for him love that.
Yeah.
Right? There's people, there was a guy I work with who said the next day, he's like, that's my kind of debate. Because if you can't handle it, then
where no one makes a point or states a fact.
That's what I said. You mean where you talk over somebody when you say, yeah, I spoke to a bunch of experts. Well, who?
Yeah.
Who are the experts? Cite somebody.
Right.
Don't just say things with no... with no backup, no factual information. And so there's a pile of people who are swayed by that, who believe that, right? When you have to sift through it and not too deeply or finely either to go, yeah, but what are you saying? Who? Yeah. Who are these people? And you go, oh, nobody. You don't have anybody.
A lot of people are saying... that's been his whole thing all the way through, is he never wants to just come out and say, I think I'm doing an amazing job. It's always people are saying I'm doing an amazing job. Who? Anybody at all? And there are obviously some. He's got his supporters. The people who blow my mind through this entire thing right now are the ones who say they're undecided. What do you not know now that you think you might learn by November 3rd about these two candidates?
And so when I watched the end of the Jays game and I flipped over, It was just ending.
The whole nation flipped over that night.
but there was a pile of sort of post debate coverage, right? And I went to CNN. And that's where I
big thanks to Jake Tapper, gave us the new clothes to this podcast.
Yeah,
you'll hear that in a bit, folks.
To hear them, and they had Wolf Blitzer talking with, and I can't remember the guy's name, but a fact checker,
Daniel Dale,
somebody who was given things that the president said and say, can you check those facts?
And just spin in.
And him saying, yeah, there's none. That is factually incorrect. And that is factually incorrect.
Yeah.
And that's what he said at the end. He's like, and I think to me, this is what you come away with, is Biden didn't do a pile.
No.
Right. But at the end of the day, what he's got to lean on is the comparable.
Yeah.
You go, yeah, you were not super effective, but you weren't super ineffective,
right?
And then you look at it and go, and really the only adult on the
yeah.
on the podium. So
I don't think Biden's a great option. I just think he's better than the alternative, and baby steps is all you can hope for at this point.
Well, yeah, no, spot on. And so to me, it is, and so to double back to the beginning and your first point with the Proud Boys, I was not there when he said, you know, when he went through the whole.
Denounce.
Exactly. And then said to them, you know, stand back, stand by.
And within the hour on Proud Boys websites, they were selling T-shirts that said standing by. Like they absolutely read into that. They absolutely took that. Yeah.
Well, who doesn't?
Right.
Who doesn't read into that?
Right. All you had to say was, no, I freely, openly denounce white supremacy or the Proud Boys or whatever you were. You refused to do it. And when they asked in days afterwards, his spokesperson or him again, do you want to clarify? Did you just get tripped up? Did you? No, we're good with that. Like, that's where we stand on it. So,
as everybody,
this point.
Yeah, as everybody who knows somewhat more than I do says, yeah, you know, these are supporters.
Yeah.
And he is loath to jeopardize any support, right?
You can't denounce the KKK if you got a tee off time with them at 9 a.m. the next morning.
Hell, exactly. And so that was interesting. It was more, and at some point, and just in my last take on this, is when people talk about how the rest of the world sees that, or their take on it, right? And they go, yeah, we are embarrassing ourselves on the world stage. And you go, yeah, but that's how we feel. And honestly, we're the bystander who's standing there going, oh, I see you threw up on yourself at the party again.
Okay. Well, there's a Canadian guy that I follow on Twitter. He's a major political guy. And his tweet was, I don't want to be too on the nose about this, but should Canada consider renaming itself to 1938 Poland? Like, you should be uncomfortable this close to that shit show. Right, you're a thin line away from, if they get another 4 years, they've clearly got enough supporters. You just go, yeah, fuck it. We can do whatever we want, right? And that's not a good spot to be in as your neighbor.
Well, it was you who said, I don't know, months ago, maybe even a year ago, I can't remember, when you talk about dealing straight out of the dictator handbook.
Yes.
Right, in terms of
textbook.
Of the things you do. And you, yeah, exactly. And you look at it and go, yeah, we want to divide. We want to, you know, cause fear and anxiety. Those are the things that are happening now.
He's at Walter Reed right now as we record this on Sunday night with apparently has the virus.
Doing well, though, apparently.
So this is what I was going to bring up, and it is the last thing we're going to do politically. But I'm looking at it, and they have this press conference on Saturday. And they have his medical officials. Apparently, his top doctor is not actually an MD. Make of that what you want.
a witch doctor.
Right, sure. That says publicly at the press conference to all the media, he's doing good. He's doing better than expected. He's going to beat it. All these sorts of things. And he probably will. Like, you got to assume most people do. He is in the higher risk age group, but he's getting socialized medicine, that taxpayer-funded hospital.
I loved how somebody said, yeah, he's in the age bracket. He's obese. It was all these shots. Like,
I'm feeling attacked.
Yeah, exactly.
So he says that to the mainstream media. He's doing good. No problems at all. This was just a precaution. So he is saying publicly to his supporters, the president is strong, and he's going to beat this nothing virus, which has been his stance.
He was benching 350 just this morning.
Exactly. And just feeding it to his wife in there. Like, he's doing great. But then, afterwards, his chief of staff asks,
I hope she's doing as well.
Not now. Right?
Yeah, if you weren't already feeling sick,
right?
There it is.
Now I feel ill. Yeah. So afterwards, the chief of staff is caught on camera saying to the White House press pool, you know, shut off your cameras. And this happens all the time. White House staff to the White House press pool give off the record stuff. They make sure that cameras are shut off before they say any of it. And
there's public consumption, and then there's
that's right. So in this case, the White House chief of staff, though, is caught on camera asking for the cameras to be shut off before he gives his. So it's not what he said, but there is evidence of him saying there's more. Shut off your cameras. So immediately after the press conference, word starts flowing out. Okay, it's worse than what we said it was. His blood oxygen went low. There was a fever. It was worse. You know, it wasn't necessarily just a precaution that he was taking to Walter Reed. And they've covered their bases here. This is straight theater. This is what you do. You say to your supporters, the president is strong and has defeated this virus that we don't believe in. But to the left-wing media, you hope to soften the coverage. You hope to get a little sympathy. This is, again, man, I know I've said it before and you reference it. This is fucking textbook. This is what you do. You send one message to one side, you send another message to the other, and hope that things soften enough to... I'm blown away. And I said on Friday morning, and I'm clearly wrong, but what I tweeted out Friday morning when I first woke up and I saw that he had tested positive, I just tweeted, he's lying, and left it at that. He's obviously not. Enough other people around him now, everyone around him,
yeah, everybody
has tested positive. So I doubt he's lying now, but everything that's happened since then, you have to take through this. I don't know. I don't know what to believe. Is he doing good? Is he doing bad? They took pictures of him that were released and they didn't think to, for people who don't know, if you take a picture on your Android or your iPhone, there's metadata in that. And if you send it to somebody,
I don't know how to do that.
You don't have to do shit. It's already in there. So they can track you.
I'm kidding.
Yeah.
I'm kidding.
It's like, I send you a picture of the beer I'm drinking tonight. It will say in Nepean at 5:05 p.m. on what, unless you know how to, you know, erase that shit yourself, and which you can do. It's not even hard, but most people just don't, including the president's staff, who released two different pictures on Saturday. Here's him working in this part of the office. Here's him whatever. And there's like one piece of like his ties taken off in one, but they're taken like 6 minutes apart. They've clearly just moved him to the next room and tried to, you're like, these are 7 minutes apart. This doesn't prove shit that he's still working in there and doing well. You changed his shirt and moved backgrounds. It's insane, but it's enough that the people who want to believe him have enough to believe him. Right. And
well, and you know what it comes down to? And you listen to enough people. Well, you listen to enough people who have, you know, Canadians who have gone over and worked in the KHL, right? And and you have Putin playing in a KHL All-Star game and scoring 11 goals, right? Like, to me, Americans, well.
It's like Gary scoring 11 goals in the NHL.
Well, this is it, right? And you're like, oh, look at that guy.
Yeah.
He's incredible. Our leader is unbelievable. Leader. Nothing can beat him.
Leader.
And yeah, leader. Yes. And so at some point, people have to be like, it's theater.
Yes,
it's absolute theater. It's there's a thin line between WWE, Monday Night Raw,
which Trump has appeared on multiple times.
And I believe that Stunner, that got the Stone Cold Stunner, I believe. And so, honestly, and then he became president. I don't know how that, wait, Pete Rose is next. I think Pete Rose is going to be the next guy.
He's been tombstoned a few times, actually.
Yeah, see, this is what I'm talking about, right? So this is...
It's what you want to believe.
There's a large segment that has to be... Yeah, it's a mess, man. It's an absolute
gong.
It's an absolute gong show. Hot, fiery dumpster fire.
Go vote.
Vote, man. Absolutely. But then the whole idea of I will not go away quietly. That whole thing is
and that should be the biggest takeaway from the entire debate was if I win, yes, it was legit. If I lose, no, fuck that. This was rigged.
And mail-in vote has been happening for forever. Yeah. You got elected using mail-in votes as well.
Yes.
And now all of a sudden it's not good enough.
No.
It boggles the mind.
You believe what you want to believe, right? Whichever side of it you're on.
For sure, man.
Through the looking glass.
This is it. This is it.
Why don't we start talking sports on the Blue Jays? Who had a short trip to the playoffs. It was about a 27-hour run. Lost both games. I guess, like, really, we shouldn't be shocked. It was a 1-8. The Blue Jays weren't supposed to be here yet. To me, if we circle back to the conversation that you and I had last Sunday, this was exactly why you don't expand the playoffs. You had one great team and one mediocre team. And I do believe the Jays are on the right track, but they were not, you know, ready to be a playoff. So this is what should have happened. As Jays fans, you hope for the upset in two games. Anything could happen if Ryu does this and in game one that happens. What was your takeaway from the series in general?
Yeah, I think, you know, it's a lot of people who were riding the train and saying, you know, experience, you know, you get to learn, you have the, you know, the pressure cooker that is. Anyways, yeah, I don't think you were that person, because you were the one last week at the end of the show saying, yeah, you don't expand and you don't do this and you don't do that. But as soon as it happened, and as soon as it was done in two, right, because there was the debate about Ryu not starting game one, do you start your ace, do you not start your ace? Yeah, well, go and ask Cleveland, who started Bieber, likely the best pitcher in the AL this year, and he didn't win.
Nope.
Right? And so at that point, there's nothing guaranteed, right? You look at that same Cleveland with Hand, their closer, who hadn't blown a save all year.
Right.
Game two, bam, blows a save in a
shit
short series.
Fast,
shit
right?
happens. So yeah, Ryu, who has been, we talked about it in the last 10 weeks, super reliable.
Yep.
Yeah, he had a shit start and it just came at the worst time possible. But that's baseball, baby. And that's a short series. That's how it works. Is Bieber and the Indians now a bad team? No.
Right.
No, it just shit happens, and those young bats couldn't hit.
That was the biggest thing for me as we work our way through this thing and looking at game one, and everyone was so upset about Shoemaker coming out at the end of the third, and he had thrown 35 pitches. He was still running hot. That had been long predetermined. So we can have that debate, right? Should it be left up to the manager to have a feel for the game and what's happening and maybe give him another inning? It's worth remembering that he was coming off an injury. He'd only had one start. I personally, as I watched it, felt like he probably could have gone out for the fourth and thrown one more inning. But your one leadoff home run in that fourth inning away from going, ah, see, fuck, right? Told you from the other side. This is an
analytical.
Yeah, well, okay. Fair enough, right? But when that combination of Shoemaker and Ray goes six innings, one run given up, one walk, seven strikeouts. Like, it was a great combination, but it doesn't mean shit if you're not going to hit. And they didn't hit.
Yeah.
And Snell shut them down. Talk. Go ahead. Sorry.
Sorry. And I cut you off, but I love the talk of, yeah, well, if Shoemaker goes one extra inning and then Ray goes, and then maybe Cole doesn't get in and doesn't give up the homer. And you're like, what? That's a lot of ifs and ifs
exactly.
And ifs and ifs. And you're like, forget it. Right. You just, that's
if
baseball.
NEJ got a hit. Like, can we start there? Like,
this is it. Well, and your last two innings, you have two guys on base.
Yeah.
Like, you have opportunities to cash.
Yeah.
And all you get is that, man, sack fly, which was a borderline sack fly, right? In terms of, so, you know, what they've been doing in terms of, and this is where, to me, I look at it and go, this is a group of young guys, for the most part, who had to face the pressure in the last 20 games of being forced to. You know, I think about that Orioles series where the Orioles were 1.5 back, and it was a three-game or a four-game series, and at the end of it, they were 5.5 games back.
Right.
Like, those sorts of things are the things you look for, the milestones or the markers in your playoffs or your run up to the playoffs, where, you know, they roll off that 7-game losing streak, but then they write it by beating the Yankees 3-4 and then taking 2-3 from the Orioles, right?
Yep.
But these sorts of things where you've put some stuff together that you could put in the bank for next year. Yeah, they got smoked by a better Rays team with
people forget it's a 1-8. Like, that's what they faced this time. It was a 1-8. Tampa was by far the better team.
Well, and you look at if that game went, if that series goes three,
yeah,
the arms that the Rays are putting out in the starting rotation, right? Mm-hmm. And then that bullpen, they just kept bringing out big arms.
Guys you've never heard of arms. And have like weird sidearm or submarine bullshit that's still all coming in at 97. And
yeah.
And as Arden Zwelling called it on our preview show on here, he said, it's a clown car full of killers. Like that, they're all weird coming out of that bullpen, but they will all mow you down fast. And that's what happened.
That 7'11" guy with a, you know,
throwing submarine.
Father Time beard. You're like, I don't know where that ball's coming from. I think it touched the outfield fence on the way in, right? And you're like, yeah, there was some crazy shit. And so, yeah, they got sat down. And so,
yeah,
I am not, you know, my the 3-1 loss, you go, that's playoff baseball, man. They lost 3-1. They got shut down by good pitching.
Yep.
And, you know, then you watch it. I tuned in. It was the start of the second inning, and it was 1-0. And I'm like, all right.
Hey, Ryu was far more in the first, they should not have let him try to finish that inning. It wasn't there, right? And you go from down 3-0 to down 7-0 or whatever the fuck it was when he gives up that bomb. That was it. That was the fucking game. And you again, it's stick to the plan that was laid out before you. You can yell and scream and jump for Charlie Montoya to be fired. He's not the guy making these calls. This is not, that's not what this team, they brought in, frankly, a weak manager so that they could do this. You couldn't bring in a top end, reputable MLB manager and still tinker from above and pull the strings. And at times it's worked and at times it hasn't. You can't yell to fire Charlie Montoya when Charlie Montoya was not the one who laid out this pitching game plan. And Andrew Stoughton before game two of The Athletic, and he has a close eye on a lot of these things. He said, keep an eye on Ryu because there's been a ton of times with the Dodgers and the Blue Jays clearly picked up on it that said Ryu was better on 5 days rest than six.
Yep.
So that's maybe one of the reasons they went to him for game two. They also said there was some soreness coming out of that last start.
I think I said that last Sunday on this podcast.
And he said, coming out of that, though, watch the fastball because he's not a heat guy. If his average fastball velocity is below, and he had it to the point, it was like 89.2 or something, he had it. And he said, if it's below that, you're in trouble. And for the first two innings, he threw two pitches over that mark. And you're like, oh, shit, I wonder. And sure enough, he starts getting knocked around. Even in the first inning when he kind of got out of it, he was getting hit hard. Like, there was catches back at the track. And so he laid it out. He's like, here is the point that you have to watch him at. And he wasn't there. So I wonder if he wasn't hurt. I wonder if he wasn't
And you see him in his best starts. You're like, he's topping out at 92, right? Like, he's not a...
No.
But when he's able to spot that 92 mile per hour fastball with all of his gorgeous changeup, curve, those things are make his fastball
fine.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so,
and that's what Stone was saying. His only two bad starts all season were when his fastball averaged under this whatever number, 89.2. And I'll share the article, subscription required but recommended, from Stoughton, where he just said, watch it. Just watch it. You could see through the first inning, and it's there it is, 88, 9, 8, you know, 91, well, 1.
and it begs the question, why push him to 100 pitches in that last start?
That's a fair question for sure.
Right?
You're trying to clinch, right? You're trying to make sure this is done.
Not only are you trying to clinch, but you're like, no other Jays pitcher has made it into the seventh inning.
Yes.
And you know, we can talk about pitch counts and the short season. There's guys with complete games this season, so it's not
unheard of. Not many, though. Not as many as there used to be, right? There's more and more baseball is going this way.
No. I understand the whole idea of what's so prevalent with the no, don't let your starter see the third time through the rotation, that whole thing. You know, Robbie Ray was complaining about it, right? He's saying...
Oh, that was Roark.
Rourke, sorry. Yeah. Rourke is saying, yeah, you'll let Ryu go and he can.
And Rourke can has like an 8.23 ERA third
I was looking at it going, man, you of all people, you're not the guy, man. Yeah, I don't want to hear from you when it comes down to, you know, whatever your deal is. But I was looking at an article which talked to which Atkins was saying that they are totally willing, despite the finances of the time, to bring in an impact. Keegan Matheson was always was also talking about this, right? About Atkins saying he was willing to bring in a high impact player to the lineup next season.
Yeah.
And so they were talking about what's his name? His name escapes me now, from the Cincinnati Reds.
Not Bauer. Oh, yeah, Trevor Bauer.
Trevor Bauer
carved his hand up on his drone or whatever the fuck.
Yeah, exactly.
Doing.
Yeah. Fixing his drone.
Yeah.
You know, or James Paxton.
Yeah.
Right. Big Maple.
Yeah. Nice.
And so to me, if you could bring in, and if you start to look at now a starting rotation of Pearson, Ryu,
yeah,
Bauer slash Paxton, Shoemaker, right? Whatever that looks like, right? As as you flesh that out, one more starting pitcher, I'm pretty satisfied with.
Well, what maybe could it's be. Maybe it's Trent Thornton, right? Maybe it's Anthony Kay. Maybe it's somebody you already have who has another. Like a lot of those arms coming
now
out.
Now you're speaking like a former Cleveland Indians man.
Okay, but as a lot of those guys that were coming out of the pen this year would have been AAA starters this
year.
Anthony Hatch is one of them for sure. So I think it's interesting, and I don't think this ass tanning from the Rays should take away from the fact that there was a good season there, right? And that this team is on the right track, and there's a lot of pieces. Could you pick up a good defensive shortstop this year and move Bo Bichette to second base, Biggio to third, and have a far better defensive lineup that way, right? I wonder, right? I think there's things there, but I don't think this loss should take away from the fact that this team is on the right track.
This is not, to me, at the end of the day, you're like, what, was this team going to win the World Series?
Right.
No.
Right.
And so, yeah, to me, I'm quite happy with what happens here. And to me, some of the things I saw this season are what I want to see moving forward, right? And I'm left with the questions of, you look at what's Guerrero going to do? Now, I'm surprised at the end of the day to look at his regular season average at 265-ish, right, with his 9 homers and his 25 RBIs. Yeah. It's lower than what I would have thought. But, man, especially
but
at the end, it was game.
At the end.
For sure, I was going to say there was end of the season games where he was like 2-for-4, 2-for-3, and you're like, still only 265, right? But when you look at the end of the day, how much hype he rolled in with, and I use the word roll, but that he's going to be compared to, you know, Acuna, Tatis Jr., right? And what he's doing, right? All these guys at sort of a similar age.
Not yet.
No, this is it, right? Yeah, and so, and you sort of go, this is what you have to do, Vladdy.
We got some hockey stuff I want to talk about. Before we do, want to let everybody know on Tuesday morning, Sean Fitzgerald of The Athletic, an author of the book Before the Lights Go Out, A Season Inside a Game on the Brink. Really interesting read as he weaves in and out of a year inside the life of the Peterborough Petes. And rode the bus with them, talked to a lot of them, had some of the same conversations we have about the idea of the new building versus the old barn, what goes into that.
Well, he wrote that article that we talked about here.
Yeah, and wrote a full book on it. Also about new Canadians, how they're embracing the game, why ratings continue to go down even here in Canada, certainly why registration for minor hockey here in Canada continues to go down. Really interesting guy, has wrote a few different pieces in The Athletic, and certainly this book. We will share all the links in all the usual places if you want to pick it up. It's great stocking stuff. A really interesting read. I had checked it out over the summer. So Sean Fitzgerald will be with us on Tuesday morning. And on Thursday morning, Tim McAuliffe of Tim and Sid on Sportsnet We're going to give you that one on Thursday morning. All kinds of talk about the broad sports broadcasting industry, about his thoughts on what the damage might be to Canadian football, both at the university and at the CFL level from the pandemic. A bunch of really interesting stuff with him as well that we've been
very
trying to
tied together.
Yeah, we've been trying to deliver to him for a while, and so got to talk with him. That'll be Thursday morning. Both at TallCaneAudio.com or wherever you're listening to this one, make sure you're subscribed. Both of them really interesting discussions. Think you'll want to check that out, man. What's
well, you
on?
Will tell,
go ahead.
You will tell Fitzgerald when he's on that this podcast is huge boosters of the Peterborough
of
Petes.
The Petes. Yeah.
You'll make sure to know that you've spent more than your fair share of time on a Thursday night taking down cheap hot dogs, great popcorn, and watching guys like Ty Domi, Luke Ritson, Chris Pronger, you know, yeah. Kay Whitmore, Ron Tugnutt, Kay Mike Whitmore. Ricci.
Yes.
Come on, Barry Jackman. Honestly, man.
It's an interesting discussion, and he mentions in the book all those big names and how now a lot of kids won't report to Peterborough, right? Like, and how it's almost become analogous to this sport in this country, right? It's the thing. The Memorial Center was the thing that tied this community together, and you would come and you would see the Petes, whether you were a hardcore or it was just the thing to do on a Saturday afternoon or whatever it might be. And it's sort of being left behind by your London Knights or your Windsor Spitfires or your Ottawa 67s
Ottawa
who can afford to either build or renovate new buildings and really attract these big crowds. It's harder and harder to get kids in Peterborough either to play minor hockey or, you know, kids from across Ontario to accept their drafts to Peterborough. Yeah. So
well, and it's you say it, and it's one of those things where you're like, as a guy who grew up as a now, you know what, it's funny because when I lived in Peterborough, I was a 67s fan, right? As an Ottawa as an Ottawa transplant living in Peterborough.
Yeah.
But all those players I named played when I lived there.
Right.
And I used to love to go see it. And but it's the reality, right? It is that it has fallen to this status of, you know, in the late 80s, early 90s, it had still been the team that had put the most players in the NHL of any major junior franchise. Like, it is a historic bedrock foundation in the OHL. And yet, it's fallen on hard times, as in that's not a place that people want to go. Do I want to send my kid there? And trust me, as somebody who spent their high school years in Peterborough, I got scars, baby, both physical and mental. Probably not where you want to send your kid for those years. But again, it's not for the hockey reason, and I think it's one of those outposts.
It is.
Right?
It's become that. And it never was that. Like you said, it was a hotbed, right? So if you want to get started on the book, like I said, and we'll share the links, but Before the Lights Go Out, A Season Inside a Game on the Brink. And it tells you right there, there's some ominous signs about...
I'm going to give you a little, you know, as somebody who's put two kids through minor hockey, right, to the age of 16.
Yeah.
And I have a coworker who's putting two kids in this year, $750 ahead.
Getting a second
just
job.
To register.
Yeah.
Yep, just to register, right? Doesn't include team fees, equipment. Man, and that's house league.
Yeah, that's it, man.
You're talking about a $2,000 investment to put two kids into minor hockey.
You could put them in soccer.
Level.
You could put them in baseball. You can put them in basketball for a fraction of that, right? So, and I think, I wonder for how many kids was last year's Raptors team the Paul Henderson moment, right? Was that...
Oh.
Especially if you don't identify as the classic small town white Canadian kid, right? As a country becoming more and more multicultural by the day, and you don't have to pay that kind of equipment cost and the cost of keeping rinks open and shit like that. I think that Raptors thing, we talk about Vince all the time, and we're living it now, right? Jamal Murray, who just finished doing his thing and killing it for the Nuggets. Yeah. That's a Vince kid, right? Vince Carter lit it up for a couple of years in Toronto and made basketball cool across Canada. That's a fraction, I think, of what you're going to see from that Raptors run in 2019, where Burlington and Saskatoon and whatever, we're having these outdoor
Jurassic Parks,
that's right.
Three of them in the Ottawa area.
Yeah.
And if you look at, you need to look no further. And I've, don't stop me if you've heard this before. My first year university Canadian studies course, they talked about Toronto being less than 2% non-white in 1972.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And then by the mid 90s, it being almost a 50-50 split. Yeah. In the mid 90s.
Yep.
Right. Now you have whites as the minority,
yeah,
in the GTA. You look at a Raptors game, it is the rainbow, right? In terms of the people who attend that game. It is everything. It is all Canadians are represented in that yeah, demographic.
Well, and Sean points out the book, right? He says, look at a Raptors game and look at a Leafs game, side-by-side photos, and he just goes, tell me which one of those represents Toronto more right now. It's not even close. See,
I haven't even listened to the interview or read the book, but that's what I'm saying, is that Toronto Maple Leaf crowd is still lily white for the most part.
Yep.
Right? Yet that is not representative of the demographic of the GTA. And so the country as a whole, you're right, has work to do, mm-hmm, right? In terms of, you want to continue to sell. And I still love hockey above all
else.
Of
course.
But we need to sell that to everybody else as well. And everybody else needs to be included in that.
Sean Fitzgerald, Tuesday morning. Tim McAuliffe, Thursday morning. Both really interesting conversations. Hope you'll join us. Those will be at tallcaneaudio.com. Monday morning. Always, man.
And maybe after on Friday.
Yeah, all right.
Trade deadline.
There you go. We got a lot going on this week. Why don't we move to hockey as we are headed into draft week and free agency week, normally in June, normally spread out just a little bit more. It won't be this time, as the first round of the NHL draft goes Tuesday, continuing into Wednesday, and then free agency, yeah, Friday. This is going to be... Go ahead. No, oh, I could hear you gearing up back there.
Yeah, and no, what it was, it's my anxiousness to speak,
yeah,
which... You know, you're.
I'm just trying to set the table for you, man.
You're teeing up Fitzgerald, and you're teeing up McAuliffe, and then you're telling the good listener where he can get it. And then you're like, and then there's Rob trampling all over Matt's good shit.
Well, most of these listeners have been here a while. They're familiar with this phenomenon.
And they know where to get it, too, I'm sure. But I just want to, you know.
Got to tee it up, man.
I got to follow my sword a little bit.
All right.
But not for long.
All right.
Not for long. The draft.
Yes.
I am, man, like so many Senators fans, I'm sure I'm waking up with these very vivid dreams of what Tuesday looks like, right? In terms of
morning wood, you know, we call that, folks.
Yeah, honestly, and you come through and it's like, I see it and it gets to the point now.
Stutzler.
Yes. It's shameful, really, in terms of the way you... And now, I sent you a text back last week when Michaela was coming on. I said to you, ask her who she would take with that fifth. Did you ever get around to that?
Yeah, but that was several shows ago, and I can't remember now what she said.
All right.
Well, good listener will find it at tallcaneaudio.com. But we did have that conversation.
Yeah, I looked at it and went, oh, man, the show's an hour and 50 minutes long. I don't got time for that. I can't sift through all that.
Yeah, you said this the last time you and I recorded, and then you and I went an hour 35, like that was somehow less.
Yeah. It's hey, it has nothing to do with what you and Michaela are talking about.
Yeah.
It really has to do with your my attention span.
Yeah, I get that. I'm familiar
it's got nothing to do. Well, am I speaking? No? All right. Then I'm starting to glaze. Yeah, I'm starting to glaze over, and you're like, there's only so much yelling at my Bose speaker that I can possibly do, right? Before I'm like, all right, I got shit to do. I'm out of here.
So who do you want, man? 3 and 5? Because I don't want to spend this whole thing on the Sens, but we will. They are the most interesting, having two picks in that top five. What do you want to do? Who do you hope falls to 3 between Byfield and Stützle?
I hope Stützle falls to 3.
Okay.
But then the longer it goes, I'm like, you hear people talk about that there's a very good possibility in 5 years, Byfield may be the best player in this draft.
Right.
in 5 years.
Well, this happens all the time, right? Where you have the longer and longer. Are they going to, is it going to be Tavares or might it be Duchesne or Hedman, right? Or just as a, once you have time to think about it, you just overdo it. You're like, no, just take the fucking guy that everyone knows is the best fucking guy. That's easy at one. I don't know if it's as obvious at two and three.
As your good friend, the morning host here on local TSN 1200 would say, it's the paralysis due to overanalysis.
There you go. Yeah.
and that's the thing, right? Is you've talked about it so long. I'm fully prepared to be disappointed with whoever they pick at 3 and 5, right? But I'm like, you can't be disappointed with whatever they do, right?
Yeah.
But then at the end of the day, you're like, I'm prepared to be disappointed with both, right?
Everything, yes. As a Sens fan, I get that, right? Like, why shouldn't you be prepared to be disappointed?
What I would hope to see right now is I would hope to see Stützle at 3 and I'd like to see Perfetti at 5. That's what I would like to see. I think there's a better probability that Detroit takes Perfetti.
I keep reading that seems to be a fit, is Perfetti in Detroit. At 4.
Right.
So if that happens, what do you want to do at 5?
Yeah, well, then you hear a lot of talk about Lucas Raymond.
The heartbreak in his voice just thinking about it.
Yeah, well, no, not really. Not really. But it's almost like I think I would even be interested in taking a look at Jack Quinn.
Who I've seen everywhere from top 5 to like 14.
Yeah.
Like there seems to be now, Craig Button says best scorer in the draft, which is obviously worth something. I've seen Sean Simpson repeatedly saying, "Take a look at Askarov." Like,
yeah, he's been super bullish on that.
Yeah,
to the point where he's like, "I know they're not taking him, but he's like, it's one of those things where if you start a rumor and you see it enough times, you wait for it to come all the way back around to you, right?
Wish it into existence."
Yeah, they're not taking Askarov.
I don't think so either, right? But that would be an interesting.
All right. I think I would be disappointed at this point if they took a defenseman, either Sanderson, Drysdale, or you're starting to hear Schneider now.
Yes.
In terms of this guy who's come from way at the back of the pack, but. You know, if you listen to people who know these things, next year is supposed to be a deep defensive draft.
Right.
In terms of defensemen, Ottawa's still going
to
be a lottery team.
Expecting to have a high pick again.
Yeah. Well, I think they're going to be better next year.
Yeah.
I just don't, they're not making the playoffs. This is still a draft lottery team next year.
How do you predict them to be better next year with like 9 guys on the roster? I have no idea what they're going to be next year.
Jared Cowan, baby, right there.
Yes, bringing him back. Do it again.
Yeah, bring him back. So, yeah, I think it comes down to I would like to see them take high-end forward skill. That's what I want to see right now.
And it's the hardest thing to get. Like, I'm a big Jamie Drysdale guy, but I don't know with the Sens, where you already have Brännström and you already have Shabbat and some other guys that you guys are higher on that most of us wouldn't know. I know Sens fans really like Willanen, and there's some other pieces
But see, those three pieces you named there, Shabbat, Brännström, Willanen, left D, all three of them.
No, and I get that. And the right-handed D is the hardest thing to find. But if you're already pretty happy with your young defense, being able to draft twice in the top 5, I think I'm with you. I think you got to take the forward. As much as I'm high on Drysdale, and it's just that I keep reading everyone saying, hey, skates like Niedermeyer, skates like, and it's hard to ignore that, right? We go, I could use a Niedermeyer. I get it. When you pick twice in the top, I think you got to throw two darts at the board and go, I'm looking for 2 top 6 forwards, and I think I can get that done here, right? Like,
the thing is, and it's funny, again, you listen to enough people, and all 10 minus Lafreniere have been on all people. Mentioned in the top 10,
yes,
have been on local radio minus Lafreniere.
They've done a nice job of getting up all those guys. Like,
yeah, and so each one you listen to, you're like, oh, that guy would be fucking awesome.
I love that kid. This kid seems cool. He'd be great here.
Yeah, honestly, this is it. And you're like, oh, we could do all this stuff. And then so it's, again, it's one of those things where you're like, no, this is what I want, right? Yeah. Like, when they talk about a Lucas Raymond being a winger, yeah, but he you know, people saying kind of has Marner qualities, right? And you're like, I could use that.
Sure.
Well, sure, we could use that. Yeah. Right? And so you start to go through all these things, right? And so at the end of the day, I need forwards. I need at least one center. So Stützle or Byfield, yeah. And I need Perfetti, or I'm looking at maybe either one of the 67s or Raymond, right? It just sort of comes down to, and at that point, I want to see them parlay some of those second round picks, four of them, into making that 28th pick move up. And I'd love to see Hendricks Lapierre in that.
You're just trying to win a bet.
Pick. Oh, that bet is so in the bag for our gajillionth, beer
right
on the line here.
Yes. For those unaware, the Senators had 13 picks coming into this. They have traded one away. They're down to 12. Rob set the over-under at 10.5.
Rob picks. Took the under. Matt took the over.
That's, yes.
That is not incorrect. If
no, it's not. So
okay.
The Sens right now have 12 picks. They need to trade two away for me to be correct.
Yes. No, if they trade two away, I'm correct. That's 10.
Right. I'm on record saying they won't trade another two away. They will trade one more, maybe. And I this is more just my NHL conservatism, where we go into every offseason, every draft week going, this is going to be the one, crazy shit's going to happen. And they're just like, nope, we're going to stand pat. And
I'm just saying, this is a team that traded up to get to Logan Brown. They traded up to get to Mads Søgaard last year.
Oh, stop trading up.
Yeah, well, but I'm just saying, they, for sure.
Just stop. Just roll the dice enough times.
The score app, they put out a thing saying, Sens draft history, part one. And it was like up until 04, whatever it was. And I'm like, oh, man, they listed the notables drafted out of each year.
Yeah.
And I'm like, if you're listing Stan Nesekash as one of the notables that you've drafted that year, it's 300 games, whatever, you know, but.
Well, and this is the thing that Dubas gets ripped for all the time, is he likes to trade back. He's like, and there's always like somebody who wants to jump up and thinks that the difference between 75 and 66 is life changing. He's like, all right, I'll drop back. And now they're not exactly killing it either, but he's at least collecting lottery balls, like grabbing one more, as opposed to the guy trading up who's giving one away. And so it's just a philosophy thing. Yeah, so the draft, I think this year is going to be really interesting. I think we will see some more moves. I think a lot of them will be based around, you know, salary versus cap hit, guys just trying to move things around. But we have seen some moves before we even got to draft week. And one of the biggest ones so far that I think maybe sets the market a little bit, at least on goaltenders, is Robin Lehner signing with the Vegas Golden Knights, 5 years, at about $5 million per. And you and I sat here in studio on trade deadline day with Steve Warren. And I asked both of yous, are we seeing Robin Lehner not get the long-term commitments that we want? This was after a short but brilliant stint on the island. And then he moved to the Blackhawks, where he played pretty well, and was moved on to Vegas when it looked like the Blackhawks were not going to make the playoffs. They, of course, ended up getting in to the expanded playoffs. But he ends up taking over the starter's job in Vegas from Marc-Andre Fleury and finally gets the long-term deal. But I asked you guys that day whether the failure of teams to commit to him was based on his performance or based on their concerns with, A, his mental health, which he has been open about, or maybe even just the fact that he was so open about his mental health and speaking on that subject. No one was willing to commit, and that's fair because none of us know for sure, but what do you read into the fact that Vegas was willing to say, we got time, we got 5 years for you, like, we're ready to do that?
See, the response to this is two-pronged, and it's super interesting because his stats, for the most part, in Buffalo, very good.
Yep.
right? Especially in the second half of his stay in Buffalo.
Yeah.
Very good. Then he moved on to the he played in the trot system. And people are like, well,
yep.
I think he benefited by that.
But yep, everybody does.
if you compare his stats though in the island to his stats in Buffalo, very similar, right?
Yep.
You look at what he did in Chicago in a backup role for the most part,
mm-hmm.
but still 30 games.
On a bad team.
On a bad team. He had way better stats than Crawford did.
That's right.
And then he moves on. And so I think at some point.
I think that was my point that day, was what more do you need this guy to show you?
Yeah, yeah. I just think, and I can't remember what Steve and I had to say on that day, but it's really hard to say that it's anything other than what you just mentioned, right? That,
yep.
I don't know, man. He's shown himself.
I
don't
know if I want to go long term on this.
Yeah, to be, you know, but I think crazy George McPhee, angry George McPhee. I think he's like, I see. Well, and they are, and it's funny for a team that's been in the league for 3 years or whatever they've been in for.
Yeah.
They're going to go for it now.
Honestly, right? All the time.
But, well, and they don't have any time to feel bad or have any, you know, romantic sentiment towards Marc-Andre Fleury. You're like, psh, you're out, buddy.
Shot through the heart, baby. You're too late.
Or stabbed in the back or exactly, whatever the deal is.
Well, and Friedman says that he says this weekend, as we're speaking, like anything that we're talking about on the hockey front now could change in 3 minutes. We're just going to talk about it. It is what it is. He says that the Blues will try once more on Pietrangelo, but that if he goes to market, he thinks that Vegas is his next most preferred destination. You go, well, that will never work with their cap. They don't care. They find ways. They just start punting guys to the sideline. Yeah. And like Vegas has suddenly not only become this expansion team who's in the mix all the time, they're a financial powerhouse and a team that guys want to go to. Pacioretty waves to go there. Stone waves to go there, right? Like people want to play.
And it's funny because Pacioretty may be the guy that gets punted.
Yeah, could be, right? Like,
welcome aboard. See you later.
You were great for us last year. We need something this year.
But not in the playoffs. So bye.
Right. And so I don't know what's going to happen there. I don't know if Pietrangelo's going to, but it was just to illustrate that guys, when they get there, they like it and they hear good things about it. And Stastny, I believe, also had to waive, or was he a free agent? He might have been a free agent.
He was a free agent.
But either way, right, shows to go to this expansion team. And so I wonder what you think about it in terms of setting the market, because he's a $5 million guy for 5 years in a no-tax state. So what does that mean for your Holtbys and your Crawfords and your Hudobins? And there's other guys that are going to be traded, and like your Matt Murray's, maybe Freddie Anderson's, guys like
Thomas
that.
Thomas Greiss!
Could be Greiss. You know, is he the top guy? Like, did he just set the ceiling?
Well, and if it wasn't for your blathering, Matt, and taking over the complete second prong of my answer to the question.
Pace some hold music in over Rob.
Yeah, exactly. Do snip finger snapping.
Yeah.
No, what it comes down to is...
Blather all is, I want.
I'm producing this show. I will do what I want to do. And I'm okay with that, right? We've got 5 years. We've got history, baby, right here. And yes, my change in tone has come from the Imperial Stout. Thank you very much, Innocent Gun.
Yes.
If you look at it, was a head scratcher, the acquisition of Leonard, because Chicago clearly is not interested in re-signing Crawford,
mm-hmm.
who's now into the open market, which you've addressed. You've brought in Subban, who has shown himself to be nothing more than a backup.
And barely a capable one.
Yeah, so for sure. So super interesting how the dynamic that this sets up, because you can only assume now you are not going to pay 12 and change to have two goalies. So Marc-Andre Fleury, yeah. I think you can expect to be in that market now as well.
Yeah.
And so
they're going to have to eat it, though. Like, no one's taking seven mil on...
No, and on a 37-year-old goalie.
Not happening.
You are going to have to for two more years. And so I agree
unless
with you.
He's going to be a senator.
Well, yeah. And then who knows what's happening, right? I can't imagine what that looks like, right, in terms of, all right, we'll take him. But you owe us one, George. You owe us one.
Can we have Mark Stone back? No.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and see, and again, as when you were running those names off, Mark Stone, who still talks glowingly about the city of Ottawa,
yes. Yeah,
he's saying, when I got to Vegas, and I'm like, fuck yeah, this is gorgeous.
There's
here.
People welcoming right? goes, down the escalator, and like,
well, they had a oompa band, whoever it was, waiting for him at the gate at 2 a.m. in the morning.
Yeah,
and so those sorts of things are. But I do believe, yes, to answer your question in a fucking serious roundabout way, four connections on that flight, Leonard is...
I do believe Alejandro Kirk will play next year.
Yes. Yeah. We just need Blake Snell.
Right.
If that was the case, we would be fine. But yeah, Leonard is the best option on the open because everybody else you look at, whether it's Hopi, whether it's Murray, whether it's Crawford, whether it's Greiss, all these guys.
Any of the Alberta goalies.
Oh, I don't even mention those guys because nobody wants them. And you know what? I don't like to interact on Twitter too much because it's unseemly, really. But I ended up on this Devin Dubnyk to San Jose thing.
We'd like to have two terrible goalies.
I'm back and forth with this Sharks guy who's saying, oh, if we get Devin Dubnyk, with Devin Dubnyk and Martin Jones, we have the best tandem in the league. And I'm like,
circa 2013.
Yeah, that's what I said. Are you kidding me, man? Is the smoke so thick on the West Coast that you can't see or breathe?
Still trying to look through the orange sky out there.
Because that is crazy shit right there. Dubnyk is so past his prime. And Jones, yeesh.
Yeah.
Bring those two tandem, the tandem in. And see what you got with the defensive liabilities you have, the aging roster you have. You are not back in contention. You are out in the fucking woods. So anyways, I was.
So Robin Leonard.
Well, all I'm saying is the goaltending market is.
There are more goalies than spots, I think. I think you're going to see a notable name end up without the job he expected to have going into the Pens just re-upped Tristan Jarry for more money than he's worth.
3.5 for three.
That's not he. All of his numbers suggest that he went on a wicked hot streak, and he's not as good as Matt Murray. And you can argue all you want about how good he might be, Matt Murray, but Tristan Jarry is not.
Two cups says,
yeah,
whatever.
Yeah, if the Penguins. And with what Jim Rutherford has done lately, every GM in the league should be phoning that guy every day going, what do you want to do, man? You want to do some crazy shit? Let's talk. Yeah. Right?
Like, hey, what about that Sid Crosby kid?
Yeah.
What do you got going on?
He's
got
to be worn out, right? Like, so.
Well, and the thing is, Rutherford, he's clearly banking in all in on whatever Crosby and Malkin have left.
I don't even blame him for that. I just think he's wrong, right?
Like, but he's already a million years old, man.
Yes.
He doesn't care. Whatever happens, can I trade you my 2025 first-round pick?
I'll be dead by the time you draft that
kid. I don't care. I'll be gone.
This is like the OHL draft where they trade for draft picks who are currently 12 years old or whatever, right? Like, as long as he's got those two guys, he's going for it. And I'm kind of like, I get that because the rebuild's going to be painful either way. The further you can punt that down the road... fair enough, but I just don't think he's making good moves, even in terms of that, right? Like, it was Hornquist for Matheson and whatever out of Florida. It's not a good move. Like, you're not...
The other throw-in forward that came with that, I can't think of his name.
Yeah,
right,
I'm working on that too, but fuck it. So,
yeah,
I wonder, man, and this is going to be an interesting week. I don't know...
Nobody available or left is going to get more money than Leonard, right?
On the scale, right? Like, you have to look at, just as an example, this won't happen because they're goaltending set, but Crawford, to Montreal at 7.5. You have to do the, okay, now the tax thing, now the $5 million for 5 years in Vegas is different than $5 million for 6.5 in Toronto or Montreal or New York or
Boston,
California, right. So yeah, on that sliding scale, I think you're right. Leonard was the best goalie available, but he had made it clear for a long time he was far more interested in the stability and the length of the deal than he was about the term.
Looking for term.
What do you think about like a Holtby to Colorado? Because to me, that is a team that has one of these weird windows where for 1 year, you could do some crazy shit. Taylor Hall to Colorado to play in that top six. You could wicked overpay him and take a run before Makar needs to get paid, right? Before a lot of
They have 1 year.
Yeah, they have one of those crazy years where you have a pile of space and you could do some shit. And I wonder about Taylor Hall and Holtby just because, to me, he's probably the next best guy that you don't have to trade for, right? You could give him more than whoever else is going to give him for 1 year, but you need a guy who's willing to gamble on himself.
Well, see, to me, there's a couple things there. I would be more than willing to give Holtby and Grice or Grubauer, whatever the deal is, right? In terms of it, to overpay now for this next year.
Yeah.
Give ourselves two options, right? I Francouz, sorry about that, buddy. You know, you're going to end up in Winnipeg or yeah, exactly. Or you're going to end up in Alberta. Mm-hmm. That's where that's going to go.
Oh,
right?
No.
Yes, exactly. And so you need to come in with two goalies next year, right? I'm not sure exactly what Grubauer's status is, but how about Grubauer and Holtby?
Yeah.
That's already proven to win a cup, right? Yeah, am I not right? Grubauer can play the bulk of the regular season and bring in Holtby. But I agree with you, right? In terms of,
like, they're fascinating. Like, they're already a top four team in that conference. The thing worth keeping in mind for people who've forgotten is the pandemic has taken a toll. And so you're going to see players have already agreed to defer 10% of their salary this year back to the owners to be paid that later. They're also going to accept a 20% escrow. You're never getting that back. So for free agents, do you just sign a one-year deal, a two-year deal, and hope that the sport is growing back by the time that you are negotiating again? Or can you do a long-term deal? And, you know, we used to talk a lot about Toronto loved to pay all their money up front. Guys now want their money deferred, right? Because it's all going to go to escrow. No, give me my fucking bonus in year three or four and hope that things are growing back. This is what's interesting with Colorado right now. They have a ton of cap space. Would a Taylor Hall take a 1 or 2 year deal and go, I'm going to go take a shot at this? Because to me, out of all the teams that could fit him in, that's the most interesting one, right? Like, to me, he might put them over the top, and playing with those guys might help re-inflate his value when he does become available next year. If you put him on a line with Rantanen and McKinnon, like, that could be fucking dominant, right? Like,
well, and I think what you're talking about there is could, because as somebody whose stock has fallen further than right. Taylor Hall's in his 1 year in
yep.
Arizona.
Yep.
Or his half a year in Arizona, whatever that was, right? In terms of, yeah, I'm 2 years ago, I was the league MVP, and now I've been in the desert, literally and figuratively.
So maybe I don't want to gamble on me. I want to gamble on McKinnon making me an MVP again.
Well, no, this is what I'm saying is maybe, and I think this is a pie in the sky kind of thing, but that's a guy who looks and goes, hey, I would take an extension. Just give me a 1 year extension on this.
In I'll Arizona? Take
$6 million.
They're unloading.
No, sorry. Oh. I'll play in Colorado for my last year's contract.
Yeah,
$6 million.
Yes.
Give me six.
Yeah.
I'll stay status quo.
Yes. Yeah.
And then see where I am.
That's right. I think he could seriously reinflate his value there.
Well, because that's a guy, he would kill it there
yes.
in amongst better players, right? As opposed to being the guy
yeah. yep.
like he was in Arizona.
New Jersey.
And what's interesting, as you say, I think the number of places for guys to land are going to be super interesting. Like, it's fine for you and I to sit here and talk about offloading contracts. And you look at how quickly it was. It's reminiscent of Chicago's first cup when, man, they had to disassemble that team right away.
Bufflin.
Yeah.
Like, everybody and left.
Exactly. And you look at Tampa, and people are saying, oh, yeah, well, you look at Tyler Johnson, who I'm not sure I'm interested in right at this moment.
Right.
But you have a bunch of guys who not only have no trades, and they have no trades there in Tampa because you are in a tax-free state where I've taken less money.
That was the deal. Yep.
Because I'm in a tax-free state. You're going to flip me out at this same value to play in Boston or in Montreal?
Yeah.
Where I'm going to have to, my tax rate goes through the fucking roof.
So that's been reported all week. You're right. As immediately after the cup was, they approached a bunch of their guys, even before the restart, and said, who's willing to waive their no trade? And all of them went, no, I'm good. And if you're on a great team and you are living in a place like Tampa and you're on, you know, a deal that you signed expecting to pay no tax on, that was the trade-off. I'll take a million less to come here, but I get to control where I go after that. And you're totally right. If you say to me, I'm making $5 million in Tampa, do you want to leave and go spend your winter in Montreal and make $1.5 million less than you're making here and not live on the golf course? I don't know, go fuck yourself, right? Like, it's not anywhere close to the same thing. And
I got a Maserati in my laneway, and I got a yacht in my backyard that's right on the water. And again,
that's the only Montreal, time you're ever going to get to utter that sentence, man.
This is it. And you go, that's the deal. If I'm in Tampa,
yep.
I'm right here, and I'm on a good team, as you said. And again, I think Montreal super interesting what they're doing right now.
Yep.
In terms of, I know. Super interesting for right now.
Yeah.
A fucking shitstorm in 2 years. But quasi-interesting right now. I'm talking about the immediate salary hit that I'm taking to move.
I'm going to make $1 million less just to change postal codes, right? Like,
At least. Bam. And you know what? We can all talk about it, but that's real money.
Yep.
That's real money. And I don't want to hear anybody say, hey, they're already making a lot of money. You're making $1 million less. I don't care what you're doing.
Everyone on earth spends to their budget, right? If you make $80,000 a year, you spend 65, 70 of it, maybe put 10 away for your kid to go to school or whatever. If you make $6 million a year, you're spending 5.5 of it on your lifestyle, right? People spend to what they make. And to just tell them, hey, tomorrow you make $1 million less. Oh, Jesus Christ. Right? Like, that's not an easy pill to swallow. And especially if you're leaving. So apparently all those guys, I'm not going to waive. So somebody's going to get waived who didn't want to. Somebody, like, that's the only way around it. They're not no moves. They're no trades. You can threaten to waive them and have no control over where they go, or go work with us and we can send you to somewhere maybe you would actually want to go. But Tampa will be...
not Ottawa.
Probably not anywhere in Canada would be my guess. But that's what's going to have to happen.
Unless you're Ekman Larson who's saying...
maybe Vancouver.
Not there, Stockholm, but I'd do Vancouver, right?
Yeah,
yeah, exactly. I would do that, right, in terms of...
I hope that happens, because he's otherwise going to end up in Boston, and for another year or two, that's going to be a problem for me, but...
Well, but not really, Matt, because Krug's not coming back, right? And so it's a swap in, swap out. Although I think you're hoping right now that there's no Krug or OEL.
Or Chara.
But
Carlo.
It seems like if you look at Sweeney's language, right, when it comes to, he's 50-50. He seems to be certainly non-committal on Chara coming back, right?
Well,
yeah.
I get that feel on Chara, too. Like, I think he's every bit as 50-50. I don't know what's about to happen there.
Well, but Chara said, if I come back, I want to be a Bruin.
Oh, yeah. No, I don't think he's going anywhere else. But I don't know that he's committed to coming back.
But see, there was another, again, I've been kicking around Twitter a bit, right? And again, what a cesspool.
Yeah. Brain's just wrong.
Neither here nor there. It was it was somebody who said, you know, with Oliver Ekman Larson saying, yeah, I'm not going to Edmonton, right?
We've all uttered a time or two in our lives.
Yeah. But to me, if I'm the Oilers, I don't want him either for that money in that term.
And the stuff that they were looking at having to give up was going to be like a first and Ethan Bear and
Or Bouchard.
Yes.
Whatever. And so it was somebody who said, and to me, I hit the like on it because to me, it was somebody saying, finally, the fact that nobody wants to come to Edmonton plays in our favor. And I was like, yes, see that? That's the truth. Because you know, at the end of the day, we don't want you.
Right.
Don't say no to us because us as the fan base don't want you. So stay the fuck at home, man. Suck in the desert for another 7 years.
Suck in the desert. Was there anything else you wanted to get to on this one?
I'm interested in, there was somebody very smart, super smart on this show.
Mm. Oh, boy.
I don't know, maybe 3 months ago said.
Not me.
Yeah. No, just bear with us, folks. When posed the question.
Must have been a guess.
New York Rangers goaltending situation. What's going to happen next year?
Shustin Orkin.
One of the two of us said, oh, they're getting rid of Georgiev. That's for sure, man. That's going to happen. They're going to keep Lundqvist because he's a lifetime Ranger.
Yeah.
And they're going to go with Shesterkin and Lundqvist, and Georgiev will find himself a new spot. That was Rob who said that.
Sweet.
And very clearly, that is not the case. They're going to go with Georgiev and Shesterkin next year. Lundqvist bought out. I am super fascinated by that.
I've seen a couple different things. Like, I can't imagine that guy wants to continue to play unless it's in a place he might win. The one that I keep hearing, and I don't know whether it's his best bet or not, I keep hearing the Caps. Like, whether he would go in there and back up Samsonov. And that would be interesting, and it would give him a chance to win. Like, the Caps, assuming they don't have to hang by the pool in another bubble situation, maybe could get that shit going again. I don't know where else that guy's going to go. He's only going to major markets, right? Like, he's more of a GQ guy than an NHL goalie now, right? Like,
see, and I had heard Flyers until they've extended Elliott, right? 1 year, 1.5.
I don't know why you did
that. Yeah, I know. That's, but again, you're looking at a backup, right?
Yeah, for sure.
Hart's the guy there. And so they were like, it's the idea. And that's more of the talk of what works in reality versus what works in fantasy.
Well, and in theory, he could take league men, right? He's still getting all his cash from the Rangers.
For sure. No, Corey Perry, all those guys, yeah, right? Yeah, who were like, I'm just Shattenkirk.
Yep. $13 million in dead cap space for the Rangers now.
For the Rangers.
Yes, with Shattenkirk, Lundqvist.
Well, they're making way for Jack Eichel. That's what's happening.
And they
there.
Still have, like, though, even with their $13 million in dead space, because there's someone else, Girardi, has also bought out. And that's why they had to trade Mark Stahl to the Red Wings, because they're like, we can't buy out another $5.5 million deal. You do it.
Mark Stahl should have came to Ottawa.
Yes.
And then Ottawa could have wiped out that whole Brian Lee thing from 05, right? It's all wiped away. We now have Mark Stahl, and it's totally fine.
But even with all those buyouts, the Rangers still have like $13 million in empty cap space this year because of, like, they tore it to the studs, right? They were going to rebuild, and all of a sudden, like, oh shit, we're good immediately. Like, with Lafreniere, they signed Panarin. You're looking at
Lafreniere and Kako were going for Jack Eichel.
Yes. We'll see how that. I'm not expecting that.
It's funny the shit that comes out of Rangers, you know, message boards and shit. The thing saying Ottawa's going to trade the 3 and the 5 and Brady Tkachuk for Lafreniere.
One. I'm doing that if I'm the Rangers.
And you're like, go fuck your hat.
Like, you're like that. But Pierre might be like,
this is Pete Norlin's.
Yes, exactly. I wonder, man. I
there's a few places that I think if he wants to go, like there's nowhere, like there's no reason for him to end up in LA or suburban LA. They're not going to be any fucking good. Could he go to Washington like that? To me, that could fit. That could work. And before the Brian Elliott deal, maybe Philadelphia. But he's not going to Columbus. He's not going anywhere in Canada. He's like, that is a keep me in a GQ rated city or all right. I'm retired.
And so what you've already touched on Sean Simpson,
mm-hmm.
TSN 1200 morning show guy.
He's not coming to Ottawa.
No, what Simmer said was, he's like, okay, he's already getting his money. He said, Keith Jones, you got a face for radio. You are out on the NBC cast. He goes, they're putting Lundqvist in beside Patrick Sharp on the best looking panel in pro sports. He's like, handsome Hank Lundqvist and beautiful Patrick Sharp.
Nice.
Come on, man. And Tappan over there on the other side, right? You got three gorgeous people
beautiful. All
on the same panel.
In terms of goalies, Fleury will be a Senator for a minute. They're going to pay $3.5 million of his cap hit and then pass him on to wherever he was really going to go, right? His $7 million in Vegas. Trade that to Ottawa, $3.5 million Ottawa will hold on to and get a second round pick out of it and then ship that on to wherever the fuck else. But Lundqvist is interesting, man. Yeah, well, Lundqvist will be interesting, though. I don't think he's done. And I don't know that he wants to be a straight backup, but might he go somewhere where he's like a tandem guy, right?
All right. If he doesn't play for the Frölunda, never going to change their name, Indians.
Never.
He's not playing anywhere else.
He's not going back.
He's not playing anymore.
He's a New Yorker. He's.
Yeah. Yeah. I get it. He's a GQ guy. I totally agree with you. And that's why you see his beautiful face on the panel or you see him nowhere.
Okay. I'm intrigued
for
by
London
that.
For London Indians.
Yes.
He's coming back home.
Or Melbourne he's not Red playing Hawk anywhere. Or whatever the fuck it was.
Yeah. Fief. Red Hawks. Right out of downtown Malmo, baby.
It's going to be a big week, man. We got the draft. We got free agency. I expect to see more moves. I don't know that we're going to see all the big blockbusters that every year we get promised, but I think there's more owners than people expect who are clinging hard to their penny bags, for lack of a better
term. Well, because we talked about it, right? We talked about guys like ownership in Dallas, right, who is heavy into Moxies and other retail industry who are getting pinched elsewhere, right? I think there's going to be places where who are up against the cap now or close to it who are going to have to download. And so Matt and I will be here Friday night.
Yes.
But whether Matt knows that or not.
Friday night sounds good, man. A couple pints and free agent reactions. A couple pints,
for sure, man.
Let's do that.
Well, let's do it.
You people have your, I was going to say rarely heard, but rarely requested Saturday morning show. We're going to give it to you.
Give it to me. I agree.
That's going in the intro. Why don't we run this one down? Anything else for this one, man?
No, I'm good, man. Lost but I want to thank, I would like to thank Innocent Gun, Vanishing Point, Imperial Stout, for the lack of quality in this show, or the lack of coherence.
Jesus.
11% Imperial Stout yes. Right there, baby.
All right. Well, I ended up moving off of the 6.6 IPA out of wherever, the Red Line and Barrie. And back into the Raven from Old Flame, which is whatever. And so I've had two more of those as we've rolled along. There's lots to get to today, man.
Yeah, well, and as I've said, I went from the 11% Imperial Stout down to the 6.5 Brute.
Brute.
So I haven't done myself any favors. But we're good to go, baby. Good to go.
It's going to be a big week. We're on Twitter and Instagram at TallCaneAudio, Facebook.com/TallCaneAudio.
Why don't you tee up, Matt, who the good listener can expect the rest of the week, and I will lay back.
Literally coming out of that to do it. But thank you. Tuesday morning, Sean Fitzgerald of The Athletic, author of the book, Before the Lights Go Out, A Season Inside, A Game on the Brink.
Go Pete's!
It's Tuesday morning. Thursday morning, Tim McAuliffe of Tim and Sid on Sportsnet, 5 to 7 on Sportsnet 590, The Fan in Toronto. And, of course,
U Sports.
Yeah. We had quite a talk with Tim about U Sports and the CFL, certainly trying to run a show similar to what we're running, maybe on a slightly bigger scale, during the pandemic. And I hit him right off the top with Rob's point that I would be battling with them throughout the show on the battle of the big boy broadcast voices. And I asked him to weigh in on that right off the top. So make sure Thursday morning you check out Tim McAuliffe on the Tall Can Audio Podcast. Anything else you want to feed me there, man? Or did I?
And Rob Christie on Friday night for your...
We will get that out to you Friday night. It won't even be just Saturday morning. For you Friday night people who have nothing better to do, like us, than to sit around and record slash listen to a podcast.
Talk sports, man. Talk sports.
It'll be there for you.
Leave it. Well, and you know what? I'm going to leave you with a quote that I heard today.
Gas, grass, or ass.
Your talent is the floor. Your work ethic is the ceiling. Bam! Right there. Take it and use it for what you want.
It's Tall Can Audio. Have a good Monday. We'll catch you all on the next one.
See ya.
That was a hot mess inside a dumpster fire, inside a train wreck. It was a disgrace.
Thanks for listening. You can get more TCA at tallcanaudio.com or by searching Tall Can Audio on your favorite podcast app.